Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, the big man, Roman Oben with you, taking your calls at 201-939-4513. Also, your comments on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Good afternoon, everybody. The Giants, unfortunately, Roman, with a very tough loss for a second consecutive weeks. And these are the ones that sting the most, because much like the game in San Francisco, they had a chance in this game. They had the lead in the fourth quarter, and they simply could not hold on and stop the Cowboys from driving down the field and getting that game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, John, and before we go into the X's and O's of the game and some of the intricacies about what led to the loss, I have to say that over the last few weeks, even in these losses, this team has showed improvements. It's just the totality of the improvements haven't enabled them to play winning football in the fourth quarter.
They're also trying hard. The effort has not gone anywhere either.
Yeah, so, and I know, you know, watching the TV copy, Chris Collinsworth was saying that, you know, John Mara wants to see hope in terms of this team and you know, the fact that this team has a worse record at this point in the season than the team this time last year doesn't give you a lot of optimism. But in terms of the product and the what's being put on the field on Sundays, look, you saw Schwartz get in there at right tackle or for Pugh. You know, he fought hard. You know, some of the runs were, you see they were going to start to open. The pass protection broke down a little bit, I think. But overall, and I said one of the keys to the game going into this thing was this team had to be in attack mode. You had to attack this team. You had to go after Dallas. You had to score fast, score early. You had to, you know, make them play like teams have to play perfect on the road to execute. Unfortunately, defensively, things broke down in the second half, and they didn't match some of the things offensively. But overall, I think this team still has a lot of fight, still has a lot of resiliency, and, you know, but the reality is you are what your record is, and the Giants are 3-8, not 8-3, and, you know, I guess mathematically out of contention for at least the NFC East division.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it, Roman. And before we get into the reasons for the loss, I want to touch on really a play that blew up the realm of social media and sports media in general last night. Have you seen a better catch than that Odell Beckham Jr. catch late in that game?
You know, funny, we were, before the show, we were talking to about when I was in San Diego when Antonio Cromartie, we played the Colts on a Sunday night. I think it was the 07 season. Antonio Cromartie catches a one-handed over Reggie Wayne. Literally the same exact catch. Catches it in the air, brings it back, but it was an interception. It wasn't a touchdown.
Right.
It was a defensive play.
No one cares about defensive play.
Yeah, exactly. Offense is what sells tickets, what puts the fans in the seats. But now Odell Beckham, it was excellent. And the fact that he was a rookie doing that, and we all know what happened when Victor Cruz obviously got injured. Number 13 became the number one target. And another thing, it's no secret that he is a number one receiver.
And
there was always this
that
discussion
is not a
about
secret.
This team doesn't have a true number one, or Cruz would really be a good number two. And, Randall's maybe like a 1A if he at his best, but Odell Beckham is a number one receiver. He yanks balls out of the air. And one thing I've always liked about Odell Beckham, besides the enormous, the great catch he made last night, is Odell Beckham is the kind of guy that proves that you don't have to be a 6'4", 220-pound receiver in terms of the new model wide receiver in the NFL to be productive. He's got big hands, long arms. He yanks balls out of the air like rebounds.
Great hands.
And he's got speed, route running ability. I mean, he's got the tools in terms of, you know, being a great receiver in this league.
Yeah.
And from just a personality standpoint, if you saw any of the interviews, the TV interviews after the game, he was somber. He was sad. He said, it doesn't even matter. I don't care. That's a guy that wants to be a great player, not a guy that said, hey, I got my 10 for 146, so I'm good.
Well,
my fantasy numbers are good. He's not that type of guy.
No, he's not. And I'll tell you one other thing. I was watching him in the locker room after he got a lot of treatment and took a shower, and he was trying to, frankly, get his clothes on to go get to the podium to do his post-game media interview. He could barely bend down. I mean, he got whacked on that play over the middle, and he was stiff, he was tight, he was not moving well, so he definitely played through some pain in the second half of that game. And you mentioned him being a number one receiver, Roman. Apparently the Cowboys didn't get that memo, because in the first half, they played a lot of single coverage on him.
Right.
He was targeted 8 times, had a catch on all 8 targets for 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. Then in the second half, obviously the Cowboys said, maybe we should start dedicating a safety to this guy.
Right.
He only had 2 catches in the second half. But Eli didn't miss him on the second half. In the second half on that deep play when he got a little pressure, that could have been an 87-yard touchdown catch. I think it was in the 13-yard line. Or maybe it was a 7. It was either 13 or 17. I don't remember.
80-plus.
Bottom line, it would have been a long touchdown.
Right.
And the Cowboys gave a little more attention to him. He had to miss. I think he missed 2 sets of downs. I think about 7 or 8 plays in that last drive after he hurt his back.
Right.
So, look, he's going to get more and more attention here, and I think eventually, Roman, you're going to see straight-up double teams on him as the season goes along.
And as you should, but from someone who's played in this offense, this West Coast offense, at the same time when the Dallas Kiffin and Rod Marinelli in this same defense as well, all these routes happen within 25 yards of the line of scrimmage, John, and when you have a number one guy that's going to get that coverage –
Hard to double those, right?
It's hard to double that guy, and he's still going to get his numbers. But Fells, Danelle, Reuben Randall, some catches to the backside of the backfield. You know, I make this reference to the West Coast offense where that's where a back is critical.
Yeah.
I mean, a back can have 60 catches in this offense. And you saw, I mean, I think Jennings had 8 for 68, if I'm not mistaken. So, but you can't have drops when those other guys are throwing the ball.
Yeah, Jennings, I think, hit 8 catches on 10 targets. His one drop, by the way, ended up being a costly one. He dropped that one pass on the first play of that final drive when the Giants tried to get down the field. And, well, bottom line is, Roman, as you said, the Giants lost the game. So let's break down here some of the things that led to that loss. And to me, the one disappointing thing about this game is the Giants outplayed Dallas in a lot of ways. You know, Dallas is one of the best teams in the league in time of possession. The Giants held the ball for 35 minutes.
That's
the Cowboys
insane.
Just for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That is domination in time of possession. The Giants ran 21 more plays than the Cowboys did on offense. The Giants completed 70% on third down in terms of third down conversion. The Cowboys were just at 40%. I mean, the Giants outplayed Dallas in a lot of ways. But there was this has kind of been the story all year.
Right.
There were a couple plays here or there in the second half. You know, Eli Manning, he said as much in the postgame interviews with the media. I'm not breaking any news here that he made a bad pass to Preston Parker. He had a little bit. Parker did his best to try to bring it down with one hand, tipped his hand, went right to Barry Church, and the Giants had trouble recovering from that in the second half.
The irony of that interception.
He was wide open. Oh, man,
well,
was he open.
If he doesn't tip it, it doesn't get intercepted.
No, it's incomplete. Right.
Yeah, it's an incomplete pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just bad luck at its worst.
Yeah.
And we talk about this. I was going to mention this about Preston Parker. You know, sometimes bad things happen in spurts. There was a kickoff return that would have gone out of bounds had Preston Parker not decided to return. I think it would have returned like the 16. I mean, now they're getting the ball at the 40.
Yep.
You know, amongst other things. That was literally like right after that, right after the...
Trying to see if the Giants scored on that drive. I don't think they did, but let's see. That was a 27-yard return. I think that was in the fourth quarter, right?
Right.
I can check that out here. But look, and that was a play, and then conversely, and early in the game, Anciarolo had an opportunity to intercept the Tony Romo pass when he airmailed it to Jason Witten, and he couldn't come down with it. So it's those little plays like that that add up. And with all the injuries on this team, Roman...
Right.
They've had trouble overcoming those plays. Like back in 11, they can overcome that Eli pick. They can overcome the defense, you know, not coming up with an interception. They had the chance because they had that, you know, Nixon, Cruz, and the big playability, the pass rushers forcing turnovers. This team with all the injuries and, you know, they've been banged up so much, they have not been able to overcome some of those mistakes. And you can't ask your quarterback to be perfect. You know, if you're throwing the ball 45 times, guess what? You're going to throw a pick. It's just the way the league goes.
Yeah, and you talk about overcoming the injuries. We'll never know what this team would be at this time of the season if it's Thurman out there, along with McBride, Prince Mukamura, obviously as a first choice in that injured list. John Beason, obviously offensively. Schwartz, first game back all year. I mean, he's missed 10 games. A lot of different scenarios in terms of overcoming some of that play. And Eli Manning. We all know this. He's played well enough to win. He's played well enough to be on a team that could be 8-2 now.
No question.
He's played relatively mistake-free. I gave him a mulligan last week on the 49ers game. That's not something you see every other week.
You can't erase five picks from the ledger, but if you take that game out of the equation this year, his touchdown-to-interception ratio is phenomenal.
Right.
It's 3-1.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, Roman, it's just a situation here where, and then on that last drive, you know, the Cowboys went down the field and the Giants tried to get pressure with four. I understand the strategy. I know we're probably getting a lot of calls asking, why didn't Perryfield blitz more? Well, do you want to know why Perryfield didn't blitz more? Go back to the play. I guess it was in the third quarter when they ran Cole Beasley, isolated one-on-one with Jaron Hosley on a little whip route to the middle of the field, went inside, went back out. Hosley lost him. Jameel McClain had vacated the middle of the field. Do you know why? He was blitzing the quarterback, did not get there.
All of a sudden,
Beasley beats one guy, turns it upfield. Bowman misses the tackle, turns into a 45-yard touchdown. So when you blitz, you put a secondary, which we've talked about all year, is really banged up. You put him at risk out there against a very talented wide receiver core.
Yeah, you're sending a fifth guy, a fifth blitzer, with six guys in coverage. And Dallas does such a great job. You've got Jason Witten, arguably one of the greatest tight ends of all time. He's a red zone killer. Giants killer number one. He's a red zone target.
And look what Gavin Escobar did in the last game they played.
Exactly. And when those things happen, that's when you have the unlikely heroes like a Gavin Escobar and like the touchdown yesterday that you just mentioned as well. And then you've got Dez Bryant.
Yeah, and Terrence Williams for that.
Who should demand double coverage downfield, at least a bracket safety over the top.
No question about it. And one other area I want to touch on before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513 and hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I thought one very important part of this game came at the end of the first half. The Giants had a 21-0 lead. The Cowboys got the ball with 3:18 to play in the first half. They went 3-and-out. The Giants got the ball on their own 35-yard line with 2:17 to go. And that's when I thought the Giants' protection started to break down a little bit. Eli got sacked on a 2nd-and-8, lost a yard. George Selvey got that sack. Then two plays later, after a Rashad Jennings false start made it 3rd-and-14,
right.
Eli Manning got sacked by Jeremy Mincy. And I thought, and then frankly, then after Romo fumbles on the Cowboys' next possession, Eli gets hit again and he gets called for intentional grounding. So in those two series, Eli got hit at least three times.
Right.
And I thought that kind of set the stage for him being a little bit more uncomfortable in the pocket in the second half. And that, you know what happens when you get hit as a quarterback? Your footwork gets screwy, you rush a little bit. And I think that kind of set the stage for a second half where the offense can only put up one touchdown.
You know, early in the game, up until that point, John, I was really encouraged to see that right side of the line, just how big and powerful they were.
Played well.
Schwartz and Jerry both are listed at 340 pounds.
Oh, they're big boys.
And we're getting close to holidays. That might be 350, 355. I don't know how lenient Coach Palmieri is on the weigh-ins.
Next Sunday, after Thanksgiving, they'll probably be around 360. Not yet.
And then you had a Snyder and Beatty on the other side, an athletic left side.
Yep.
I mean, that's a perfect offensive line that you want. Early in the game, they had a big mixture of runs, passes, kind of like that high rhythmic approach.
Right.
But later in the game, when these guys had to pass protect to win, and you had to pass protect to move the ball down the field against these Tampa 2 undersized defensive linemen that are faster, quicker, they run a lot of TEs, a lot of stunts.
Twists and stunts, which they had a lot of trouble with the last couple of weeks.
Most bigger offensive lines start to break down in that type of situation.
Is that fatigue?
Part of it's fatigue.
Because remember, this Giants offense, we mentioned, was on the field for 35 minutes now. Jeff Schwartz had not played a full game worth of snaps yet this year. Adam Snyder had not played a full game worth of snaps this year. Talk to me from an offensive line perspective. If you're one of those guys, do you get tired, or is that not the equation?
It's not as much fatigue, but in terms of, and I pardon the Cinderella expression here, it's when the stagecoach turns into a pumpkin. When you're not run, pass, three-step drop, screen. I mean, when you're not mixing it up and getting, but when you're constantly setting and dropping back, some of those discrepancies that you saw in some of the prior games, Seattle game, I mean, go back to the Eagles game, some of those discrepancies will start to show up again. Rod Marinelli, who I know extremely well, was actually my neighbor in Tampa
when
I played for the Bucs, and Monty Kiffin. So I understand that system. They're going to pound, eventually find a crease, get a guy isolated, a guy that can be inside, get a guard that typically needs help, that always slides. Make sure you put a position and go inside. Give one of the D tackles a two-way go. I mean, that's what they do and break down offensive linemen that are bigger, that consistently have to pass rush. I mean, pass protector, excuse me.
By the way, our man Joe Kanye with a good quote here from Jeff Schwartz after the game last night, asked about how he feels physically. His answer, I don't know. I'll see how I feel tomorrow. I'm tired. The second half was tough, but I had to do it, so it's a good thing, I guess. So there you go.
Look, and being a guy, John, that's been in that rehab situation, I mean, I've been on PUP and came back in week 11 and had to play, and it's not fun. But one thing, when you're rehabbing an injury, you're put through more strains on your body. You know, not just the icing and the cold, all that, but you're actually put through more strain in your body to actually make it worse than playing. And sometimes playing becomes easier. You got to figure out in the practice.
Interesting.
You're on your feet.
I've never heard that before.
You're on your feet a lot. I mean, you don't sit down in practice.
Right.
You don't go 7-8 plays, sit down on the bench, get water, watch the defense, go back there, sit down. You don't get a day and a half, 2 days of rest before. You're rehab, pushing it every single day, doing more. Then you get 2 days rest. Then it's the game. I don't know if he took a shot or I'm not sure, you know, what as far as mechanism of him alleviating his pain. But, you know, now there's game speed tired, but what he's done to get to that point should be worse than how he's going to feel after a game.
Interesting. All right, let's get to the calls here, 201-939-4513. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite daily, one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. And Pierre from Dallas comes out of the woodwork. Pierre, just be classy here. Don't make me hang up on you early, my friend.
Long time no speak, John.
What's up, Pierre? How are you?
All right, guys. Hey, man, I've been keeping up with you guys. I just been keeping my mouth shut. I've been keeping up with the ebbs and flow of, you know,
very
fire
wise.
Eli, fire Tom Coughlin at the end of the season, and then going through the Paul D saying that, you know, defense, I mean, offensive line is what you needed, and then y'all drafted Odell Beckham. By the way, I played against his dad in Marshall, Texas.
There you go.
But, man, I'm telling you, that kid, boy, that is phenomenal talent, that kid, man. We as Cowboy Nation, man, that y'all got a star. Mike Irvin, everybody here, that's much mad love to that kid, man. It's phenomenal, man. But I just wanted to say this, man. Every time the Cowboys and the Giants play, it's going to be a fight.
Throw the records out.
Y'all's
right.
Record don't
throw them out.
Reflect y'all's talent. The fight and you guys, it doesn't recognize it. And I was nervous. We as Cowboys fans, we were nervous. You know, we know every time that it's a divisional game, it's going to be a fight. Throw the records out, it's going to be a fight. And can we please, man, from now, quiet the narrative about Romo choking, man. You guys did a good job. Much love to you guys. Just been keeping up with you. I just wanted to check in with you. I hadn't, like I said, I've been keeping up with you guys by on the silent, you know. But, you know, I just didn't want to jinx my team out and just wait to call in. But y'all gave us a good fight, man. Y'all record does not reflect the fight in you guys.
All right, Pierre, thanks for the call, my friend. Take it easy, bud.
Yeah, a positive call, and I think you know, people on the football side of it, the evaluators, and obviously when you watch film, I mean, Tony Romo is not a choke artist. I mean, circumstantially,
no.
The way the seasons have gone down at the end for the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, for a guy who's worked himself to work to be where he is, you feel bad for some of that criticism. But when you play for a market like Dallas and in that organization and what they've done historically with Super Bowl victories, a lot is expected out of you at that quarterback position. I remember one of my former teammates, Warren Sapp, saying about Romo that he's either going to be, Troy Aikman or Danny White. It's going to be one or the other.
And right now it's trending towards Danny White since he hasn't won yet.
Yeah,
by the way,
totally
Danny White had some unbelievable numbers, too.
Yeah,
just never happened
he's
to win the big
the
game when he needed it. And, you know, it's funny. And this goes to an overall quarterback conversation, I think. More often than not, Roman, as you can attest to, having been in this league as long as you were, quarterback gets too much credit, quarterback gets too much blame. And this is how I look at it. In week 3 or week 4 of this season, you had literally full segments on ESPN where guys are legitimately trying to argue that Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, which is absurd.
Which is a joke.
Yeah,
I mean, it's laughable funny. And these are former NFL quarterbacks trying to make these arguments, and it's laughable. And look what happens. He loses Percy Harvin. He loses Golden Tate. And all of a sudden, how does Russell Wilson look this year? Not quite as good, right?
Not very good.
How did Tom Brady look the first 4 weeks this year without an offensive line? Didn't look too good.
Right.
How did Tony Romo look 2 and 3 years ago before they drafted all these guys in the first round because they had no offensive line and the running game, by the way?
Yep.
Guess what? He played poorly.
Yeah.
So the quarterback is affected by everything that goes around them, and a lot of people don't tend to realize that, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I always say, and we all know this, the best friend of a quarterback is third and one, third and two. No sacks, no hits.
Not getting hit, exactly.
Great talent around you, a great solid running back. A defense that's going to get you the ball sometimes in the plus category so you can get easier scores. You know, creating turnovers. I mean, that's what makes a quarterback great. And the great quarterbacks that have won at a high level have had all those pieces around it. I mean, you talk about the Dallas teams that won Super Bowls. I grew up in Washington, D.C. as a Redskins fan since we're on the NFC East here. And then obviously the Giants, more importantly, the defenses of all these championship teams were tremendous. Tremendous defensive play. Tremendous running back play, running game, offensive line. I mean, that's a winning formula that doesn't change no matter what part of history, no matter who's the quarterback, what's the franchise, what's the team or ownership. But again, you talk about the criticism that comes along with the position, whether it's head coach, general manager, quarterback. I mean, it's like they're all in line, right? When it's going good, they're the reason, and when it's not, they take the criticism. And that rightfully comes with the job. And as a former NFL player, you willingly accept that as a part of the job.
I guess the offensive lineman doesn't mind not getting all the attention.
Oh, yeah,
I don't want
any attention.
No, exactly.
I want to do my job, not get called for a holding, not get called for a false start, no leaning and rocking on third down, and do that hopefully 12, 13 out of 16 games, I'll have a good long career.
I actually want to get your take on what you think about that Cowboy offensive line as we move forward here, but I want to get to the calls here in a second. As an offensive lineman, I'm sure you appreciate some of the work they do down there. Let's go to Steve in Staten Island next. Steve, what's going on?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Roman. How are you?
What's up, Steve-O?
All right. Listen, you could take that interception, and I get what you're saying. You could take all the little miscues on the offense, but here's the big picture. Here it is again, and it seems like it never ends with this team. Their defense, when they have to step up again, lays an egg. Last month in Dallas, last week against the 49ers, the wheels came off the bus against the Colts. Again, last year in Dallas, 4 minutes, you're 0-6. You got a shot to make the playoffs. Once again, the defense, and listen, it's a pattern. It's become a pattern. And that touchdown, I got to tell you, John, you're right on that as far as not blitzing, but here's where I got to call you out on it. You listen, come on. Dude, if Bowman doesn't, again, another pattern, miss tackles like this secondary has done, we're not talking about that touchdown.
That's fair.
This is what I'm saying. It's a pattern. It's the same thing. Once again, they're not losing to these teams. They're losing to themselves. And I hope at the end of the season there's some changes. And I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. That's enough of fuel. Enough. How much are we going to see? The guy gets up there and it's miscommunication. Listen, enough with the miscommunications already. You play pro ball. Make a freaking tackle.
Well, look,
that's
Steve, honestly,
saying.
Steve.
Enough with this.
Steve, look.
Listen, I'll hang up. I want to hear your answer. You guys are great. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Steve. All right, Steve. We obviously aren't going to comment on the job security or status, but here, you know, we can't do that. We're in the building. That's something we're not going to do. But I think the one point Steve brought up is a good one. They had some missed tackles in this game. And we saw, it's funny, and Banks and Papa mentioned this during the radio broadcast, Bowman had a tackle on DeMarco Murray. I think it was in the second quarter where Murray tried to go around the edge. And, you know, Bowman shouldered him down. And Murray, in fact, almost spun off of him, but he actually went down on the play. And Papa goes to Banks, you know, Carl, it's a good tackle, but he's got to do a better job wrapping up. And I think we saw that later on when Bowman missed that tackle on Beasley on that little whip route, and we did see missed tackles here and there on some of that run after the catch. I think the Cowboys had 6 or 7 plays of 20 yards or more.
Yeah, and let's be honest about the cornerback position in terms of tackling. When you've got a cornerback that's a good, solid tackler, he stands out. I mean, most cornerbacks.
Like Prince. Prince is an excellent tackler.
Yeah, and the fact that they're both Nebraska guys. Usually Nebraska guys are all fit in the same mold. But, you know, at that corner position, when at that point where you have to make the tackle, that guy's got about, you know, 15, 20 yards of momentum coming at you. And you're absorbing that blow. So.
And he's bigger than you, by the way, most
bigger,
of the time.
With bigger, faster, right. With all that velocity mm-hmm. coming at you. So unless you can break on the ball as the guy starts to turn the corner and you can – you can hit him before he squares your – Sam Madison and I used to talk about this all the time. He goes, you've got to be able to hit that guy before he turns his shoulders to square the side of the line of scrimmage and comes downhill, because then you're just at a vulnerable position at a defensive back. And that's, you know, a la some running back running downfield. Now, receivers, tight ends are a lot bigger. Receivers, that's a more favorable matchup. But cornerbacks that can tackle is really a rarity, especially in this modern era of football where – I see so many DBs jumping on players' backs to try to strip balls. Meanwhile, the offensive player is still running 7-8 yards after contact because everyone's trying to strip the ball out and they're not tackling him.
Let's go to Nugs in Minnesota next. Nugs, what's going on?
Nugs.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
What's up, Nugs?
Not much, man. I'm just a little heartbroken, you know. I watched the game last night and I just had to agree with the caller that just got off, man. I just think it's a performance league. You know, somebody's gonna have to fall on their sword for this. I mean, we started out 0-6 last year, and then we went on our little run, but now we're worse record wise this year than we were at the same time last year. And that's just not acceptable. And I think that I hope JPP is not expecting to get like some huge Ndamukong Suh type contract or something. You know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't deserve it. I mean, like I watched everything on Giants Online. Okay, and the thing that stood out that you guys always say is playing over the above the X's and the O's.
Right.
We knew the Cowboys had to pass. This is supposed to be the situation that we're built for. You know what I mean? We needed somebody to step up and get a sack or a crucial hit on Tony Romo. And I'm just looking like, okay, well, you know, Smith, he's a first-rounder. JPP's a first-rounder. He manhandled JPP that whole drive, made him look like a sixth-round draft
pick.
Nugs. I was like,
Nugs.
I was calling for Michael Sam or somebody.
Well,
you know what
no.
I mean? I was like, where's
come on,
Robert
Nugs.
Ayers? Where is, you know, DeMontre Moore? It's like on that last.
Who had a sack, by the
like
way, Nugs?
JPP just threw his jersey out there.
Well,
you
Nugs, let me say this. I talked to some of the defense linemen in the locker room after the game, and I got to be honest with you. They said exactly what you just said. It's our responsibility to go out there, beat the guy across from us to make a play and get the job done. And Mathias Kiwanuka, who I talked to, said, we didn't do it. That's our fault. Mike Patterson said, we didn't do it. It's our fault.
Right.
I didn't hear JPP's media avail, but I think he said the same thing from what I understand. So these guys know they got to go out there and make plays. They know they didn't get it done on that final job, and nobody's hiding from that.
And
yeah, I'm just saying, man. I mean, like, I'm just a fan, man. I'm just frustrated, man. I mean,
I hear you.
I mean, you know, you got fans that call in like a couple weeks ago and say we should just be happy and blah 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 blah. We've got these Super Bowls, but at the end of the day, I love Tom Coughlin. I don't think he should go anywhere. I look at him; he's a stand-up guy. He's a general out there. You know what I mean? I know Ben McAdoo. He needs some more time to implement the offense. The offense is showing more than a pulse to me, more than a heartbeat to me. It's showing that it can be formidable. You know what I mean? I think we need to invest in our offensive line, but our defense, we just can't go with this. I'm tired of every week Terry Fuel has this bend but don't break philosophy, bend but don't break philosophy. When is our defense going to get to the point where it's we don't bend or break?
All right, Nugs.
You're going to take it. We're not giving you anything, but I'll take your answer off the line. But thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Well, Roman, look, we've had a couple calls about the defense now. What's your formula here? How does this defense get better? Is it the injuries are too much to overcome? How do they make plays at the end of these games to try to get the opposing offense off the field, something they have struggled with over the past few weeks? It's a tough question, I know. I'm putting you on the spot here.
No, I'll be honest with you. My disappointment is in the defensive line's inability to create pressure when they're rushing four people. You know about the injuries in the secondary. You know about, you know, Beason has only played a handful of games this year. I've seen Mark Herzlich make significant improvement just in the last two or three games.
He actually has played fairly well the last two games. He has.
McLean has been a mainstay in there. Devin Kennard coming back from his hamstring injury, I believe, you know, a couple weeks ago. I mean, he's gotten better every week. Jaquan Williams, unfortunately, with the concussion. But, I mean, you're seeing formulas of guys that are getting better. But, you know, you go back to the guy, I think Steve from Staten Island. I mean, you talk about what's the benchmark here. The benchmark is when this D-line, OC at his best, Tuck at his best, you know.
Strahan.
Even 2011, 48 sacks.
Tuck, you know, all those guys.
JPP, 15 sacks out the gate as a rookie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the benchmark. And when you're not playing up to that level, that's what's expected. Rush four and let seven in coverage. Somebody's gonna win. Whoever has a one-on-one should win, or at least get pressure, forcing the quarterback to make an ill-advised throw, interception, turnover, something. When that's not happening, that's where you say, you know, playing above the X's and O's offensively is going up for that ball and catching it. That ball that's not thrown in front of you perfectly.
And what
that
is ball, it defensively?
Defensively, somebody has to make a play, not just you're getting absorbed by your man. Somebody has to beat their man, make a play, and second effort, finish, grit, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's what it took. And when you watch a Giants offensive line who's obviously, you know, you insert two veterans back in the line yesterday, which did admirably well about 75%.
Especially in the first half.
Yeah. First half, and I say 60, 75% of the game. And then you look on the other side, you see a Dallas Cowboys offensive line. And it's not about being full of first-round picks. It's about the formula that they've gotten the right guys on the bus that's worked well for them.
Why does it work so well for that group?
These guys are all athletic, and they're almost all built the same. They're all about 6'4", 6'5", about 310 pounds. They're all good athletes that can run, they can pull.
By the way those guys, I think it was Martin and Frederick, got out in front of Dunbar on that one screen pass, they were throwing blocks 25 yards down the field.
Yeah, and that's
the center.
And obviously, John, I played 305, 310. I was about 6'4". I could run downfield. I mean, that was my style as a player. So I always appreciate tackles like Tyron Smith. He's not 6'7", 340. He's not just going to – big guy just going to get in front of people. He's an athletic guy, but he's big and stout enough, and he's got thicker legs to sit. I mean, I watched him against JPP, throw him on the ground, push him, stand up, and then jack him up with his two hands. And that's just great offensive line play. In terms of appreciating good offensive line play, I mean, you saw two different offensive lines yesterday. Now, the other formula works too now. If you got big 330-pound guys, you know, that can move people.
The maulers.
Yeah, the maulers against a pass-rushing defensive line.
You wear them out.
You wear those guys out in the fourth quarter. You're seeing 15, 20-yard runs. So the formula works, but whatever works, it's got to work for you. And when you have to throw the ball, you didn't see those Dallas Cowboys offensive line. I mean, you almost saw, like, they were almost pass blocking like five good left tackles out there. I mean, that's how good they were pass blocking. The kid from Notre Dame, the rookie, Frederick.
What do you think of Zach Martin and Frederick, by the way? You like him?
I like them. I like athletic guys right around that 6'4", 6'5", 310, 315 because they're big enough and stout enough to move people, but they're athletic enough to run and pull and block people on the second level.
201-939-4513. That's some hardcore offensive line breakdown. We like that. Let's go back to the phones and say what's up to James down in Virginia. James, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, James?
First time
How we doing?
Calling in this year.
Oh, thanks for calling in, pal.
I guess I chose the best day, huh?
Well,
every day's a good day to call, James.
Frankly, James, I got to be honest with you. There haven't been many good Mondays this year, unfortunately.
Right. I just want to say a couple things. On the last drive where the Cowboys had the ball,
yeah.
I think Tony Romo had like 8 seconds on one play.
7.5, actually.
We had like.
Because they mentioned it enough times on television.
Thanks, Professor.
I know. Go ahead, James. I'm sorry.
Oh, sounds like we lost James there, Joe.
I scared him.
Hey, James, do me a favor. Call back. We'll get you right back up if you call back, all right? But 201-939-4513. You must have lost your connection on that cell phone. We'll put you right back up and give us a call back. Let's go to Ed in Surf City, New Jersey. Ed, what's going on?
Hey, John. Real quick. The thing that, like, really irked me about this game was after Odell Beckham's great catch, the defense goes on the field, and they allow a 77-yard drive, which led to the Jason Witten touchdown, and that just sucked the air right out of that stadium.
Hey, you know what, James? Ed, I'm sorry. You know what? It's funny. After that play, I said, I think it was the Pop and Banks during that next break in their headset, guys, it's pretty important here for the defense, I think, to get the Dallas off the field to try to maintain that momentum a little bit.
It was just a big buzzkill. And another one more point is earlier on in the season, you and Lance, I guess, were saying, well, we're questioning what is this team's identity. And then I think that Dallas fan said their record doesn't show. Now, I don't agree with that. I don't think they're a good team. They're 3-8, and good teams don't lose 6 games in a row 2 years in a row. They haven't beat any good quarterbacks since Sandy maybe, 2 years ago in October 2012. And I am a season ticket holder. I am guilty of selling my tickets to Cowboys fans, but I am going to the Jacksonville game.
Well, Ed, let me say this. First of all, thank you for admitting that, because most Giant fans that call wouldn't admit that.
Yeah, no, very honest.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Ed, and we look forward to seeing you down in Jacksonville.
Say
hello.
And it's funny Ed mentions this. I've always had this theory, this good team versus bad team, you know.
What do you mean?
A bad team can't move the ball, can't score on first, can't score in the red zone, keeps kicking field goals. Third down, you're in the low teens in terms of third down.
Commit a lot of penalties at bad times.
Commits penalties, shoots themselves. I mean, that's what a
bad
team does.
All those things.
Now, if your record is indicative of you being a bad team, yeah, there's some things that need to be fixed. But was a 7-9, you know, Seattle Seahawks team that went to the playoffs, was that a good team? No, circumstantially, they were
good enough that year,
yeah.
But –
or was it 10-6 Giants team 4 years ago that didn't go to – were they a bad team? No, they weren't a bad – so sometimes when you use the terms, you know, bad team versus good team, I get it. But why we do this show, and I'm always appreciative as a former player that's allowed to bring, you know, that expertise into this discussion, it's so hard to win the NFL, and that's why most games are won or lost by probably 4 points, by one or two things that happen in the third or fourth quarter. I mean, every game's like that. I don't care if it's Jacksonville. I mean, Raiders won the game last week. I mean, that game came down to a few things in the third quarter. But this team is 3-8, and that's the reality. The reality is that they're 3-8.
You are what your record says.
Yeah,
you are, right?
What record says you are. But have they overcome adversity? Are they working and trying to win every single week? 100%. That's something that I would agree with. This team has fight, has resiliency. As a guy who's a former Giant, I'm wearing my alumni fleece from the Monday night game when all the alumni guys were honored. I'll trade you one if you got this in 2X. No, probably not.
Two? Only 2X? You're 2X these days,
I slimmed down a little bit.
Look at you. Fancy.
But as a former Giant, and I remember just talking to a lot of the guys and looking at the team, they go, hey, well, you know, we had, you know, in the 90s, look, I blocked for Dave Brown, Danny Cannell, Ken Graham, and then finally Kerry Collins my last year when he came in from Carolina. And the prevailing talk by a lot of the alumni guys were, look, we had some bad teams, but we just had more fight. We had a lot of fight in us. You know, fight and execution are two different things. I mean, you're paid to prepare for a game. You're paid to do all those things. But, again, this team, injuries, I want to see the stat at some point, how many total games are lost by injury this time last year versus now.
Oh, total games lost to injuries by players?
By players, yeah.
Sure,
so, I mean, you even got to go Dave Wilson to 16 games. That's off the bat. That starts the season.
And Beeson, I mean, only playing a couple, so that's a lot of games
and I
right
think
there.
Last year, Ken Palmer, the Giants insider, I'm one of the guys that gets that delivered to his house every week.
You still do?
I still get Giants insider,
Kenny
yeah.
Palmer.
I know. I mean, I'm a purist. But I think last year, like 91 games total due to injury were missed collectively. And this time last year, now versus whatever, I'd love to see what that number is.
Throw Walter Thurman in there. That's got to be 8 or 9 games
Tremaine
right there.
McBride.
Right?
Yeah. We talked about Beason. Schwartz missed 10 games already.
Beckham even missed 6 games themselves. That's another guy.
Yeah. In terms of guys that were either penciled in the start or play considerable time.
So. I got a question for you, Roman. You talked about fighting and everything like that, and James is back on from Virginia. You know, before I ask you this question, let me get back to James. He called us back. James, why don't you finish up your point, bud? What do you got for us?
Hey, I think I was saying something about how Romo had all year to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we had like 3 defensive tackles on the field at the time, maybe 1 defensive end. I mean, that's
I don't think there were three tackles.
No, if you count Ayers, he's a hybrid, so he can rush inside or outside. So I wouldn't count him as a pure defense tackle specifically.
Kuhn was on the field a little bit on that final drive, and you did see Hankins out there a little bit. But you saw Ayers in there, you saw Kuhn in there, and you saw JPP in there. On those last two plays when he had all that time, I believe the defensive line was Ayers, Hankins inside,
and then
and
JPP
and Kiwi on the outside. That's what it was.
I must have mislooked then. But another thing I want to say is Kiwi has been on the milk carton. Haven't seen him show up all season. I think it's time for Ayers to get that playing time and just send Kiwi back to the bench because he's not getting any push up front. They're running right around his side. He's all right on stopping the run. But, you know, this guy gets paid to get to the quarterback. He has, what, two sacks on the season?
What do you see from Kiwi, Roman?
Well, I think in terms of that fifth gear, that's something that Kiwi needs to continue to improve. He's more your workhorse guy as opposed to, like, a pure pass rusher.
Right.
I mean, there were a lot of years where he was in linebacker, then defensive end, then back to linebacker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the ultimate team player on that defense line, but he's your second. He gets his plays, you know, via second effort. He's a smart player, but he's not a pure just pass rusher. I see Demontre Moore as being a guy that's just a pure pass rusher, but you'll see some vulnerability sometimes in the run if you run right at a guy because he's always working an edge and not really assed out. So
shoot gaps and trying to get upfield, not necessarily holding his area.
Right.
At this point, I think you need to get Demontre Moore on the field for Kiwi just so that you could get him ready, whether he's going to stop the run or not. It's not going to kill us if he doesn't stop the run. We're already hurt in that position, so we got to get him ready to stop the run. Go ahead, throw him in the game. He's not going to get any better sitting on the bench.
Well, Demontre Moore
plays. Thanks for the call, James.
Yeah, and uh-huh. I'll answer this. Thank you, James. Demontre Moore plays, but sometimes, you know, from a fan's perspective, they look at this. Sometimes circumstances dictate, you know, when a guy plays, John, as you know, or when he doesn't play.
Sure.
Now, if a series is going well and they want to get Demontre Moore in, and all of a sudden, team goes too tight, he's getting off the field, and Kiwi's going to get back. So, ideally, it's like preseason. They have this number you hit, how many snaps you want to get a guy. Could it be 20? Could it be 35? Could it
Games,
be 8 snaps?
Formations change?
Yeah, a lot of those things. So, circumstances really dictate, you know, how much a guy plays defensively. Now, if the day that it happens where this team is up by a considerable lead in the fourth quarter, you will see Demontre Moore, guys just peeling back, getting sacks, getting interceptions. I mean, that's where you really grow. Like when you're on a team that's winning, that's always has a lead, that's when you see young defensive ends get into play. But I have no issues with Kiwi. I mean, Kiwi's always been who he is. I have a lot of respect for him as a player, what he does in the community and all that stuff, and who he is as a person. But, again, he's more of your workforce second effort guy in terms of his sack production.
Having a little bit of a conversation here with Joe, they think Kuhn was in that whole series. I thought I saw him come out towards the end. On one of those Romo plays, he was definitely in there when he had all that time. That is true. You're right. Now that you mentioned he wasn't on there, one of them. I'm not sure if he was in there or both. I'll have to check the play participation in the film at some point to see what the rotation was there.
Yeah,
get that right.
And
I was just going off of memory. I don't have that stuff written down. We should call Dottino. I'm sure he has it on his yellow legal
yeah,
pad.
Exactly. He's got the that green notebook from the movie Waterboy, the Adam Sandler. He's got his green notebook of plays. No, and you can live with Kuhn being in there because sometimes when you put a bigger defensive tackle in an obvious pass rushing situation, that guy is a good bull rusher. He's going to start to push the pocket back. He's going to draw a center to help that guard to block him.
So Romo can then step up in the pocket.
Exactly. And now you've got a right guard in one-on-one situation, and now you've got two tackles in one-on-one situation. So, you know, you can live with Kuhn. I mean, because that's what Lambeau Joseph was. That's what Hankins, Mike Patterson when he's in there. And obviously Colin Jenkins, who was missed because he was out, he serves that role. He's the guy. He's like a road grader in there. He comes in, he plays low, and he just blows up that A-gaps, and he makes that center have to block him so that two-on-one, now you've got one-on-ones on the other side.
And one other thing, too, I want to mention, once the Cowboys get the ball inside the 20 there, and I think they had it at the 12-yard line when they scored their touchdown with like a minute and 12 to go, and they had two timeouts left. Guess what? The run is back in play. You just can't throw out four pass rushers there with two timeouts with minute to go with the 11-yard line. You could run the ball three times.
Right.
Three times.
Right.
You'll be fine.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You do have to worry about the run at that point. That's not an all-passing situation anymore.
No, not at all. 100%.
201-939-4513. Alan East Orange. Al, you're up next, pal. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, John?
Al, what's going on?
I got to speak on this defense and what some of the other callers previous said. This defense is horrible. It's been horrible. And, I mean, everybody focusing on Jason Pierre-Paul, but my concern is these linebackers. These linebackers are just not good. I mean, earlier, you know, the guy next to you said that Herzlick has done better over the last two games, and I'm trying to figure out what are you talking about? Did better doing what?
Because well, Roman, answer him. What do you think?
Well, listen, you know, 9 tackles last week, an onside kick that was recovered, which unfortunately the offense didn't score on. Yesterday, he was in the, I think, second or third leading in tackles, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I didn't see Herzlick become a liability in pass drops.
Well, I
didn't
say,
see
how
him get
this?
Beat one-on-one.
Roman,
I didn't
how about
see
this?
Jason Witten.
You had Vernon Davis and Jason Witten 2 straight weeks, and neither guy had big games. I think you had to give Herzlick some credit for that, the fact that tight ends that are very talented did not burn the Giants for 2 straight weeks, Al. I think that's fair, no?
And the guy next to you, it's Roman Oban, by the way.
I'm a long-time Giants fan. I mean,
And he's a long-time Giants fan.
He's not good. I can't say it any other clearer than that. He's not good. He's not good. I'm tired of seeing McClain playing in a position that we didn't bring him here for. The Giants need to stop playing around and find a way to find a durable linebacker that can come here and shed some blocks and help in the running game. Ever since Pierce has been gone, this linebacker core, we have been a team that can get ran on. From the year we won a Super Bowl to the year after that, to last year, to this year.
Well, last
People
year the run defense was
run
excellent.
The ball on the Giants.
Well, in fairness, Al, in fairness, problem. Al, last year the run defense was great. Remember, they played the top 5 or 6 rushers in the league and held them all to under 100 yards. So to say the run defense last year wasn't good isn't fair.
When did that happen? That happened in the when we was 0-6, 2-6. I mean,
it still
I'm
happened.
Just saying, teams are coming in here. Alfred Morris ran over him and RG3 had a 200-yard game combined previous to this season. This season they're running 350 yards. DeMarco Murray comes in here 2 times. People run the ball on the Giants. I don't see no linebackers stepping up in support of the run at all. I see Herzlick get out there and get stiff-armed, and DeMarco Murray keep going about his business. That's what I've seen last night. And what I'm saying is when Pierce was in there, then people didn't give Pierce a lot of credit besides us Giants fans. But when Pierce was there, we didn't have this problem.
Look at the defensive line that played in front of Pierce. Look at the defensive line that played in front of Jesse Armstead. Look at the defensive line that played in front of Lawrence Taylor, Harry Carson, and Carl Banks.
And I understand that, but I'm saying let's get some players in here of that caliber then, because Kiwi got to go. Kiwi's not doing nothing. I'd rather see Ayers or DeMontre Moore there. He's not doing nothing. We're not stopping nobody from running that ball. And if that's going to happen, there's going to be big problems for the rest of the season and next season. What are we holding on to Beeson for? We hoping that Beeson could get back to where he was 3-4 years.
All right, Al. Thanks. Al, thanks for the call, my friend. Take it easy, bud.
Yeah, a very passionate Al from East Orange. I live a few towns over from East Orange, so I know there's some passionate Giants fans over there. But look, this linebacker discussion, John, has been going on for a few years now.
And the thing I say always, Roman, is people, I think they've actually, believe it or not, after people loved Beeson last year when he got here, and they got all excited and credited him for so much of the team's success, I feel like his loss has almost been downplayed this year because injury happened in OTAs and people forget about it and things of that nature. But to me, as solid as Jameel McClain is, I think you do lose a lot in terms of run defense when you lose a guy like Beeson. He's a difference maker when it comes to stopping the run. I think we saw that last year.
Yeah, and McClain, you know, in his role in Baltimore is a complementary role to, like, Ray Lewis or you know, he can play that hybrid, kind of like that 1B middle linebacker. He's good from sideline to hash. I mean, he's not a liability in pass coverage at all. I mean, you know, people, I think, I don't know if it was this guy last week talked about him getting run over by Marshawn Lynch 2 weeks ago. But that was
a long list, by the way. A lot of guys have gotten run over by Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, especially when you're going to make the tackle and he's already turned. We talked about this with the corners.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch had already turned the shoulder, squared line of scrimmage, and was running forward, and McClain hadn't squared his shoulder, so he got ran over because he was running sideways.
Hey, look, and Al said he's tired of seeing McClain play middle linebacker. Well, that wasn't the plan. He wasn't supposed to be the starting Mike linebacker right. this year. Al, you do what you have to do when you get injuries.
Yeah, Jaquan Williams has been out with a concussion.
Yeah.
Devin Kennard was out for a month. A
couple weeks with hamstrings.
Yeah, with a hamstring issue. So he probably would have played a little bit sooner. So this team and this organization or administratively, is constantly working to rotate and improve and develop guys. And the Beeson project, if it worked, it's a genius move. But unfortunately, Beeson got injured, and then now you're dealing with these things. So, again, if a guy like Mark Herzlich, who a lot of fans are calling and say things about, he is who he is, and he's done a commendable job. He's a solid special teams player. Spencer Payson, he is who he is.
And I've been hard on Herzlich in the past, but from what I've seen the last 2 weeks, Roman, I don't think that's a reason the Giants have lost these last two games. Not in my opinion. I really don't think so.
And I think sometimes fans have to make sure and be careful that you don't knock a guy down because he's not a Hall of Fame guy
or he's
not a Pro Bowl guy or, you know, Spencer Paysinger isn't Antonio Pierce, so that's why the linebackers are. No, that's not a valid argument. Because if you really peel the layers and read and understand the moves and
look peel the layers, you're stealing the Tino expression with that.
Does
one.
He say yeah, that?
He loves
oh,
that.
Oh,
peeling
I,
the
I,
onion. He loves
oh,
no, that. Yeah. John, I was peeling the onion
oh,
all
no.
week trying to get ready for this game.
In that case, let me rescind my comment since I'm making a Tino reference. Well, when you peel onions, there's a lot of tears. I don't want to be peeling any onions. So.
Well.
Peeling the layers in terms of the details, the intricacies, what's going on.
All right, we got two calls to go. We got 8 minutes. Let's get them in. And I want to get a real quick comment from Roman on the game against next week against the Jaguars as well. Roman will be back with you on Wednesday with Anita Marks. Thursday we'll have off because of Thanksgiving, obviously.
Yep.
We have families too, and we'll be spending time with them. And then you'll have Feagles and DeTino with you on Friday. So that'll be your schedule this week, and tomorrow it'll be Lance and Fiegel. So there you go. Let's go to Jamal in Dallas next. Jamal, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
You know, Jamal, hey. Rome, I should give you some background. Jamal called last week, and he said, guys, I'm a Giants fan in Dallas. You can lose all the games the rest of the year. Just do one thing for me.
Beat the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
I know.
You know what I mean? And not get swept. Oh, man, 2 years in a row at that.
Yep.
My question is for both of y'all, but for Roman, what do you think are the holes that we need to fill on the O-line? Is it all five positions, or is it just one or two that we kind of got to solidify to be able to turn the time for next season? Because it seems like even with the Schwartz coming in, I don't know if it's, like you said, if it's fatigueness or, you know, being out 10 weeks or whatever, but, you know, the consistency wasn't there, obviously, because he's been out. But what do you think are the holes we need to fill to be able to have some juice on that running game for next season and in the passing game?
Well, I think you have to start with injuries. And you have to look at Rashard Jennings. Looking at him hitting the holes, running screens, catching balls out of the backfield.
He makes a difference.
He makes a difference in there. If you want to go left to right, I think Will Beattie's done an admirable job.
Big bounce back
this year. He's trying to get back that 2012 form, and I think he's listened to some of the criticism. And just in terms of that personal pride, you don't hear Will Beattie's name a lot in terms of sacks or holding or false starts. You don't see her 65 a lot. I know there was some kind of mix when Schwartz got injured. You had to put Weston Richburg a left guard. I think he's more of a natural center going forward. I mean,
which
that's
is something
obvious.
Tom said all preseason to us.
Yeah, which is fine, but. The fact that he got some NFL reps for half a season or majority of a season at left guard, I mean, that's good for his career, his development as a line. Pugh, if you take away that Eagles game, which he was very accountable to how he played in that game.
Do you see Pugh as a tackle still, or do you see him as more of a guard?
I think he's still a right tackle. If he's a guard, it's a left guard. I don't see Pugh as
What's
a right guard.
What's the difference between a right guard and a left guard?
Right guard is really the point of attack in the running game. It's a point of attack in the running game, your play action. You really cannot move back an inch at right guard. Third and one, goal line, that's the point of attack. That's a strong side.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be a butt kicker at that right guard position. Usually a bigger physical guy, Snee, Ron Stone, guys I played with. Will Shields, Kansas City. I mean, that's a pure right guard.
Well, you know, Jeff Schwartz played right guard before, and he is the size to be that type of right guard, so that makes more sense.
Yeah, and that's why I think, you know, John Jerry, who's fought hard at that right guard position, I don't think he's that type of right guard.
He's a better pass protector than he is a right guard.
Yeah, he's
now.
A pass protector. Right. He's your big man that drains 20 footers. He's not a pound. he's not a pound the pavement power forward type of a right guard. And again, right tackle. I mean, there's going to be discussion about Pugh, but when these guys are all healthy and playing well together, I would have loved to see the formula that we thought. I mean, we thought going into training camp, it's Brandon Mosley and Schwartz at guard, with Richburg or JD at center, and then Pugh at BD at tackles. I mean, that's a winning offensive line. So I don't think there's any more revamping that needs to be done. I think these guys need to play out. When this thing is over, you're going to say, all right, we've got 7-8 guys. That have played now, that have started, and now let's reevaluate this thing going forward and see what pieces of the puzzle need to move to go forward. I mean, look at back Corey Brewer.
Thanks for the call, Jamal. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I mean, I'm sorry, Corey Brewer. James Brewer, guard.
See, you're going back to basketball again.
Yeah,
you're getting confused.
he hasn't played a lot.
John
this year.
Jerry is Sam Perkin here.
Yeah,
the Pacers.
I
now
know.
You're bringing up Corey Brewer.
I'm all over the place. I had a Cinderella reference earlier. But yeah, I mean, I look at Brewer as a guy who you thought he would have gotten some playing time, specifically at right tackle.
Right.
You know, with Pugh being out. So I mean, that's something that I don't know if you answer that in the offseason. If Brewer is really a fit in the future as a solid backup, I don't know that. But from what you thought the formula was going to be earlier in the season, I thought this offensive line was going to be okay because you brought a lot of guys inside to compete. I mean, John Jerry, Charles. I mean, all these guys are 27 years old and they signed me.
Mostly all these guys.
Yeah, all these guys. So, I mean, there is some optimism with this offensive line going forward.
Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand straight cash. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Can I say straight cash, homie? Was that
you offended? You can add the homie. I wasn't going to go there.
Randy Moss, in case you guys have been living in the closet the last 10 years.
By the way, did you see any of that Randy Moss, Tom Brady interview on the pregame shows?
I did not see it at all.
There was an interview with Tom Brady. Moss was supposed to interview him for Fox. All Randy Moss did the whole time was talk about himself. It was 7 minutes of Randy Moss telling Tom Brady, boy, I was really the best guy you ever played with, wasn't I?
That's so funny.
He's referencing catches. He's like, how about that one catch that I made? Remember that one? I'm like,
That's so funny.
He didn't ask him one question about Tom Brady.
Randy Moss, the reporter. I don't know if I ever saw that in his future. Randy Moss, the reporter.
Isn't it funny how a guy's stripes can change a little bit when they're a player and then they want to get a job in the media, how things can change? Who would have thought Plexico Burress would be on SNY breaking down games?
I know.
Come on.
The irony is you always had a lot of guys as a player. I mean, you know, my years in Tampa when we won the Super Bowl, you know, Keyshawn Johnson, Warren – I mean, they hated the media. They hated them, and now they're on television. They're hamming it up.
Makes a little difference, and you get the check.
Oh, yeah. Makes a big difference.
How are Eric Mangini giving the non-answers and all that press conference? And he goes to ESPN.
He just can't stop talking.
Can't stop talking. All right, final call of the show. UC is in New York City. What's going on, Use?
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy Thanksgiving, Roman. And
same to you.
You as well, Use.
Hey, I want to ask you, what happens more often, Eli getting hit or getting sacked?
I think he got hit more than I think the Cowboys had two sacks.
Yeah, he only had two sacks, but he got, I mean, a hit or hurt. A hit is actually worse than a sack because you've already thrown the ball and you've already released it, and then you're getting hit or getting piled into the ground. And I know the league has done a lot to prevent that. But
I think it was four quarterback hits, but it seemed like more than that to me. Yeah. I think the official number was four.
A hit, yeah. So a hit, Usi, a hit is worse physically and psychologically. A hit is worse than a sack, and every quarterback's told me that.
So it's because you're not protecting yourself as much after you release that ball. If you're holding the ball, you see the sack coming, you can almost brace for it a little bit, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to go back to maybe the Leonard Marshall, Joe Montana.
Well, that hurt, obviously.
I mean, that hurt.
Blindside. That's, the blindside stuff you don't see coming. Use, what else you got for me?
No, the reason I'm asking that, because it seems like Eli be getting hit the last 10 years really a lot, except for maybe 1 year.
Use, every quarterback gets hit, man. Yeah. All these quarterbacks get hit, and Eli's been a lot better than most getting back up after those hits. He stayed healthy.
Yeah.
He always plays.
I mean, stand in line. Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers.
Tony Romo with a broken back.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning with the neck. I mean, all these guys get hit, dude.
Oh, man.
All right,
another question I asked, just to end the question, is – based on the situation, Roman was talking earlier about a certain situation you have to put in a certain pass rusher. DeMonster. Yeah. I don't think he's a monster. I think he's a good player. They should have put him in for Kiwi.
Set him up for that.
You know,
one,
because it was only a pass situation, and they only had a minute and 30 seconds left. They should have just put DeMarcus Moore in for Kiwi, because they had to pass the ball. If they ran the ball, they was going to lose time or a timeout.
All right, Hughes, thanks for the call, my friend.
Thank you. You know, and I answered this a few callers ago about that. You know, circumstances dictate. You know, when you get a guy in, I don't think, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you're never going to say, okay, this guy's a better pass rusher. Let's just put him in for this part of the game. I think you still have to go with the veteran in that situation, because maybe JPP flushes Romo out of the pocket. Kiwi keeps working. He gets that sack, and then – or in the inside pocket collapse. I mean, that's how it's supposed to go, team defense. When everyone's creating pressure, you never know where the sack's going to come from. And DeMonte Moore had a sack in this game. I mean,
more of a coverage sack, in fairness.
Hey, it counts in the books. I think he's now 3.5 for the season, right. Whatever he's got. But
he actually has a decent plays per, yeah. You know, sacks per play percentage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I know the criticism I had that early, I think, Detroit game where he missed the sack and Stafford stepped up. But DeMonte Moore is improving. He's gotten better. And you know, you hope that by your third year.
Better. He can be on the field more.
Yeah, yeah. By your third year, you are who you are.
All right, Roman. Giants visit the Jaguars next week, and nobody knows who the hell's on this team.
Yeah.
You got Blake Bortles, the rookie quarterback. Denard Robinson, people know him as a quarterback for Michigan. Now he's their running back. Alan Hearns, I guess, right now, and Cecil Shorts are their top wide receivers. Let me ask you from this perspective before we say goodbye. The Giants are coming off six games. They played the Eagles. They played the Cowboys.
Yep.
Monday night against the Colts, former Super Bowl champions in the Seahawks, big game against the Niners, Sunday night football at Dallas. These are six marquee games in a row.
Right.
How do these players and how do these coaches make sure the players stay engaged when they turn on the game film for a 1 o'clock game in Jacksonville against a bunch of guys nobody's ever heard of?
Well, number one.
It's a challenge, right?
Number one, it's the next game, so you got to prepare. You haven't won in a month and a half, and you're saying, you know, probably 50 days if you count the bye week. The Giants haven't tasted victory. So that's enough motivation to go in there and beat no matter who's on the schedule.
So from a player perspective, your guy has been in the locker room and you've dealt with situations like this before. The fact that the team is desperate for a win might counteract some of that whole letdown potential.
Yeah.
Okay,
I got you. Now, if this is 8-3, you start hearing letdown game. No, there's no letdown game discussion this week at all in this building. So
that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
I think, you know, obviously
I was just wondering what the player mentality was from the guys in the locker room.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I played for the Cleveland Browns for 2 years. 1 year we were 2-1 and lost 10 straight. And then ended up going 3-13.
Who was your quarterback that year?
It was Couch got hurt.
Was that,
and then
that wasn't Heath Shuler,
Doug
was it?
Peterson, I think, was
the quarterback.
Okay, they like
Peterson
got him out of retirement.
I think wasn't he on the Jaguars too at some point?
Yeah, Doug Peterson, I think, and Jeff Brom, who was my college quarterback in Louisville. Yeah, it was.
Oh boy.
That was an ugly year. So when we played the Bengals in week 12 and finally beat them, I mean, that was a Super Bowl for us back then. Because they were like 2-10, and we were hey, this is a game we can win. We were all a good week of practice. But, yeah, I mean, it's a game. And I'm sure if you're Jacksonville, you're saying, hey, we're playing a 3-8 football team that's got some holes.
This is a chance for us to get a win.
Yeah, so you can't overlook anybody, especially not this week for both teams.
So you don't think the players will have any issues focusing this week?
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right, Roman, we'll see you on Wednesday. Always fun. This is a good time, dude.
Yeah, no, pleasure's all mine, and I appreciate the calls from the fans, and hope that from my perspective as a player, you give them another perspective look at things.
All right, no doubt. Tomorrow will be Meadow and Fiegel's giving you their perspective. They'll look ahead and they'll do a little more recap of Giants and Cowboys. For Roman Oben, I am John Schmelk. Have a great day on Giants.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Intercepted. Touchdown, Giants!
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Well, we get no punch. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Touchdown, Giants!